This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, I'm going to be talking about the new movie's Arrival, almost Christmas, because it's almost Christmas. Well, not really. It's almost Thanksgiving. Christmas is still a little bit away. I'm also going to be talking about Shut-In, Moonlight, and Peter and the Farm. I'm also going to drive by some news, do the trailer park, talk about some box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Before I hit the movie news, this is something that came in my email box. I get email, you know, because I give it out every week. But sometimes emails just make me chuckle, and this one came in just this week. It was a very simple email. It said, "Epic" was the subject line. It said, "I love your show. It's hilarious." Now, it's either hilarious intentionally or hilarious unintentionally, whichever one that is. I appreciate Jackson for writing it, because it's nice to get emails. I get emails all the time that are like, "Hey, dummy, what do you know about this movie?" Or accusing me of being racist because I was critical of the director's history in The Birth of a Nation. Stuff like that. But it's just nice to get a good old solid ego boo on the email, as clean and as crisp as it can be. But let's talk about the news. There's nothing really huge in turn. I mean, again, like last week, it's a busy news week. A lot of stuff happened in the news. Not a lot of stuff happened in movie news. And that's okay. It's nice to have a break from the crazy movie news now and then. There are minor development news. For example, Max Landis, who is the son of John Landis, has been brought in to write an American Werewolf in London remake, which could potentially be disastrously bad. I don't know. I mean, this guy did a Masters of Horror tribute to his father at one point, or he wrote a script for his father to direct and give a little nod to American Werewolf. Who knows? Maybe this could turn out good. There's also the news about the sixth Mission Impossible movie is going to be getting a 2018 release date, so you don't have to wait too long for that. I have a friend who's a big Mission Impossible fan. Even now, maybe a year and a half, 2 years is going to be a lot to wait for that movie. Fox is planning already, as movies go nowadays, they are planning Deadpool 3. And they're going to be using X-Force in it. This is, of course, with the caveat that Deadpool 2 doesn't fall apart. And I say that because of all this little development news with Tim Miller leaving and nobody quite knowing exactly why. Did he have creative differences with Ryan Reynolds? Was he trying to make it too big of a movie? Was he trying to change the character of the Deadpool movie? What made the first one so good was the fact that, I think partly because it was limited. Let's just hope that doesn't flounder so we can get that Deadpool 3. And will it work in a summer release time versus sort of that bizarre release time on Valentine's Day? And then finally, Sesame Street. That movie is back on the development block with Warner Brothers. It's been moved to HBO, the TV show, and they got rid of all the old people. You know, the people I grew up with, Bob and Maria. They couldn't wait for them to go the Mr. Hooper route, so they decided to cut them off immediately. But it's a half-hour show on HBO. Now it's going to be making a movie. I don't know how this movie's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be a whimsical story movie like Follow That Bird, or whether it's going to try and teach you something, or probably a little bit of both. But, you know, part of what made Sesame Street critical watching for little kids my age in the 70s, before you had a lot of this educational programming, 24-hour networks like Noggin, was that it was educational. It was kind of like school after school. I don't know if you're going to be able to achieve that with an actual movie. And how do you get that sort of very casual attitude that Sesame Street had trying to make it huge? Because it's going to be a big movie. It's a big name. It's by Warner Brothers. They're going to make it a big movie. And are they going to make it dark? Is it going to be like Sesame Street, The Darkness Rises? Who knows? I kid. I do kid. And I hope that is actually kidding. Too many times, and not even in movie news, which I won't go into, but I make jokes about things and they come true in real life. And I'm like, oh my God, what? People stop listening to me. Especially when I'm joking. One other piece of news, and this is going to be coming up in a couple weeks. Of course, Mystery Science Theater is having a revival. It had the whole Kickstarter campaign, bring back MST3K. And Shout Factory has control of all of the repertoire now. They have the old movies on disc that are under, like, and I'm going to be reviewing it next week, the latest Mystery Science Theater volume, something like 33. But they've also brought back Turkey Day, the idea of Turkey Day. And last year they did this, and it's not on TV. You don't have to get a, you have to have a TV if you want to watch it on TV, but it's on the internet. And they stream it. It's Shout Factory TV station. They're going to be hosting 2016 Mystery Science Theater 3000 Turkey Day Marathon. They're going to be featuring six classic episodes from the original series, streaming live, and it starts at 9 a.m. Pacific and noon on Eastern time, so you can watch it right after the parade on Thursday, December 24th, which is Thanksgiving. And that's going to go for, well, I'm assuming about 12, 13 hours. You add the segments in there and that, and ads. They're going to have ads on it, I'm sure. You can go to shoutfactorytv.com to get that. And if you have an HDMI cable, just plug it into your smart TV, and then you can just watch it on the big screen, just like you would back in the day. And creator Joel Hodgins is going to be introducing them, as he did last year, but he's also going to be bringing in season 11 host Jonah Ray. And of course, this will give you a test of him in front of the screen and this sort of this new getting the dust out of the gears, getting the grease on the wheels version of Mystery Science Theater. You know, I'm going to have to check some of that out because I love MST. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Nerdland. It's an animated film, and it opens on December 6th.
What will it take for us to get a little FaceTime with America?
We need an instant fame plan.
If we were to give the celebrity-obsessed masses something really worth watching, we'd also be launching our careers.
Count me in.
Let's go be heroes. Desperation. I always thought it was a bad thing.
Isn't it?
We've been going about it all wrong. It's not fame we need, it's infamy. You want attention? You want press coverage? You think you do that by doing good works? No way.
Now, you couldn't see that, obviously, because it's on the radio, but that's Patton Oswalt, speaking of MST guys, Patton Oswalt and Paul Rudd doing the voices, and it's basically these two nerds trying to make a living and trying to make their careers. It's an animated film done in a very sort of stylized animation. Something like what you'd see in an independent comic. That's the best way I can describe it. It's not Disney animation. It's not computer animation. It's sort of this almost crumb version. Not even crumb, but that sort of rustic, almost creepy look to it. But this actually looks quite clever. It's subversive as you'd expect it to be, I'm assuming. And it comes out at the beginning of December, which doesn't quite, which I guess makes it a holiday movie, but I don't think it's going to actually play like one. It's going to be in very limited release, I'm pretty sure. But I was kind of intrigued watching the trailer. Looking forward to that one. The next one, the Lego Batman movie, which opens on February 10th. We built
this city. What? It's the Batcave. Oh my gosh, look, it's the Bat Sub!
Don't touch that.
The Bat Zeppelin!
Don't touch that either.
It's the Bat Kayak! No. Do I get a costume? I love it, but his pants are just a little tight. I got an idea. Rip! It's better!
I can only look you in the eyes right now. Let's go defeat the Joker.
Woo! We're going on a family trip! I can wear my costume too!
Well, luckily for us, you left your costume back.
Rip!
Oh, no, under your clothes. That's perfect.
Now, as you know, I don't like to play follow-up trailers to movies I've played trailers to before. That's one of the reasons last week I didn't play the Wonder Woman trailer, because we already did a Wonder Woman trailer. But this one, I'm so giddy about this Batman movie. I'm not going to get in the trap of saying, well, finally they're going to do a Batman movie that's true to the comics. Look, if the Christopher Nolan Batman movies were like this goofy and silly, it would not have worked. Part of it is it works because it's Lego and it's not just a cartoon, but it's a hyper-realized cartoon. It's a cartoon of a toy that exists kind of where the toy is its own universe. So, like the Lego movie, that's what made that one work so well. It was whimsical. It was fun. It's something kids can watch, adults can love. You can connect it to your childhood, not just from Batman, but also from Legos. This looks hilarious because it's playing off all the jokes about Robin and his tights and his tiny little short pants. and of course you got Batman brooding and this just looks funny as heck, and I cannot wait to see it. This is going to be a monster hit. in February. So yeah, look forward. Superhero movies becoming monster hits in February are, I think, going to be the new thing. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Almost Christmas and Shut-In. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. To Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. It's almost Thanksgiving, which means it's almost Christmas, and you wouldn't even think it was Thanksgiving if you went to the stores, because they don't put any Thanksgiving crap. You might find a little end cap at a store for Thanksgiving stuff. They might have a paper mache turkey there. They might have some French fried onions and green beans to make casserole with, and you maybe can find like a cornucopia somewhere. But most of it's the second Halloween was over, the stores just vomited out all their Christmas decorations all over every single store. So, I mean, even the dollar store, I went to the dollar store. I mean, it was like literally, I don't even think it was Halloween yet. It was the weekend because I took my kids. I live near a Dollar Tree. I live near one. So we walked down there a lot and we'll get like a snack or something like that. It's fun for the kids. And we went in there and it wasn't even Halloween yet. It was like, I think it was the 29th. It was like that Saturday. And it was, you couldn't find any Halloween stuff. It was, even though trick or treat had yet to happen, it was all Christmas stuff. Oh, you wanted candy canes and reindeers and Santa sleigh and stockings? You got plenty of those. Could you find Halloween candy? No. So, yeah, we're just skipping right past Thanksgiving and going right to Christmas. So this is a title. I guess I'm just complaining about the title of the movie. Almost Christmas. There have been so many Christmas movies made. They're running out of titles. This is just, it doesn't mean anything. Anyways, a family gathers together at the same house to try to be civil for the first Christmas after losing their mother.
Nothing says the holidays quite like family.
I wasn't expecting you for another day or two. Your room's upstairs.
But the liquor's in the dining room.
Hey, Walter. Is the family coming for Christmas?
Every single one of them.
All I'm asking is for 5 days for you all to act like a family.
If I close my eyes, I can see Mom in here like it was yesterday.
She is here. She's in every pot, in every pan. We are standing on holy ground.
This is a predominantly African-American cast. I mean, John Michael Higgins is in it. They needed a white guy. They needed a token white guy. But it's mainly an African-American cast. Danny Glover plays the patriarch of it. Actually, the female cast is quite good. Monique plays the crazy aunt. Gabrielle Union plays one of the daughters. Kimberly Elise plays another one of the daughters. You've got Omar Epps as the next door neighbor who's got a thing for Gabrielle Union. Who doesn't have a thing for Gabrielle Union, by the way? She is a gorgeous woman. For all the talk that people have had about, you know, when women get too old, you know, if the guys are like, women, I don't look at a woman who's over 30. Yeah, shut up. This, you know, first of all, there's gorgeous women, beautiful women of all ages. And Gabrielle Union is a great example of a woman. I remember seeing her for the first time in Bring It On. And I always am going to think of her as sort of this high school cheerleader, but she's 44 years old. She's just young, a little bit younger than me. She looks a lot better to the opposite sex than I do. At least that's what I think. I don't know. I mean, the wolf whistles and catcalls I get walking down the street, it might tell me something differently. But I mean, Gabrielle Union, you look at her and I mean, she could still pass as a teenager. She is a beautiful woman. I'm going down the rabbit hole of how much I like Gabrielle Union, I guess. Anyways, but she's really good in this movie. And Kimberly Elise plays a little harder edge. And the whole thing is it's what I like to call a dysfunctional family Christmas movie. Instead of a family Christmas movie, it's dysfunctional. And you get one of these like every year. Last year they had Love the Coopers, which was quite frankly terrible. It was trying to be the Family Stone, which was good about 10 years ago, but the Love the Coopers just fell apart. This one, not only is it, part of what's interesting, a good cast, but it's a large cast there. And I'm like, well, J.B. Smoove's got to be in this movie because he's in all the primarily African-American cast movies now. He is the go-to guy. Once Kevin Hart became more famous, they're all going to J.B. Smoove. And he's funny in this movie. I think J.B. Smoove is a hoot. And, of course, Monique is very hilarious in this movie. Now, there's nothing new. There is nothing new you're going to see in this movie. Every little interpersonal drama that somebody has, like Gabrielle Union's character, she's divorced and she's got a young daughter, and Kimberly Elise is disapproving of that, but her husband's J.B. Smooth, who's got a bit of a wandering eye and wandering other things. You know, you've seen all of these entanglements before. And what happens throughout the film, how things come to a head, how things collide, how people fight and how people reconcile, it's all stuff we've seen over and over and over again. But just because something's been done before does not mean that it doesn't make a good movie now and then. A movie that retreads some old material can still be hilarious. I mean, oh gosh, that's why, you know, slapstick comedy works. Slapstick comedy doesn't have to be new. It just has to be freshly done. You know, it's sort of like a turkey sandwich. There's not a whole lot of new stuff you can do to a turkey sandwich. It's Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm going to do a food analogy, of course. There's not a whole lot you can do for a turkey sandwich. But just because you have a turkey sandwich doesn't mean that it's not something you'd want to eat. I love me a turkey sandwich. And there have been good turkey sandwiches and bad turkey sandwiches. But you put together a good turkey sandwich, and it can be something you've had a billion times before, but that doesn't mean that it's still not comfort food and good to have. Now, what's neat about this movie, like movies like The Family Stone, which I really enjoyed, even like Christmas Vacation, is you've got this family, and it's absurd and crazy and over the top and nuts, and people do things that are probably a little worse and more exaggerated than they would be in real life. But they strike this really good balance, and I think the film totally nails it. This balance between getting together with your family and loving each other and being happy to see each other and having warm memories and wanting to beat the living shale out of each other. And that is families. That is holidays. We're all coming up to that. We got the three-ring circus of Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. And you know what? If you're Jewish, you got Hanukkah in there. So you don't escape that. The only people who are going to escape that, I guess, would be what? The Jehovah's Witnesses. Isn't it? They don't celebrate anything. I don't know. My apologies to anybody who's a Jehovah's Witness if I have offended you. I'm hitting everything today. I'm just a scattershot. I've got a sawed-off shotgun all the way to the stock, and it's just going everywhere. So that is my apparent political incorrectness this week. Anyways, Almost Christmas is a funny movie. I had a laugh at this one. They do some great humor, and there's some things that get kind of goofy, and there's some resolutions, one particular resolution where I'm like, well, now this just is kind of going into silly territory. But overall, it's a charming movie. It's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of truth in it. It's a great way to just go see a movie and check out for 2 hours, which we all need after the week we all have had, good or bad. Anyways, I want to say that Almost Christmas rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quick about Shut-In. Naomi Watts plays a child psychologist who fears she's being haunted by the ghost of a former patient.
I feel so guilty.
You cannot blame yourself.
I haven't been sleeping that well. I saw Tom. But everybody's been saying he's dead.
Your sleep problems are making it difficult for you to distinguish your nightmares from reality.
No, something is happening. Steven has scratches on his face.
Listen to what you're saying. You're talking about ghosts.
This movie is completely under the radar. Probably should have come out a couple of weeks ago in October, where it would have been more appropriate, because it is essentially a horror movie. I guess it would fall in the realm of thrillers. It's going to get buried. I mean, no one's saying I'm just honkering to see a horror movie right before Thanksgiving. Oh, I take that back. I know some people who say that. But releasing a horror movie a couple of weeks after Halloween is kind of like releasing a Christmas movie in the middle of January. It doesn't seem to make sense. But this one looks interesting. They didn't screen it here. I don't think they did much screenings at all, which is a shame because Naomi Watts is a pretty respected actress. It does look like it has some good moments, but as I'm going off the trailer, and I'm afraid that they're going to fall into the same. So now it's turning into cliche endings and twists that you have in movies like Housebound or The Boy that might end up being not all that unique. But anyways, maybe I'll catch it on DVD, I'm sure. But I have to give it a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Arrival and Peter and the Farm. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror.
A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Continuing on with the movie reviews, let's talk about Arrival. This is a science fiction film by Denis Villeneuve. If you remember last year, Sicario, which was his film about drug trafficking down at the southern border, that was my favorite film of last year. I absolutely love that movie. He's done other movies like Prisoners, which came out a couple years ago, which I thought was okay. And he also did a movie called Enemy, which was a much smaller movie, not a whole lot of people saw. From A24, it starred Jake Gyllenhaal in this weird doppelganger type of scenario. In this movie, when a series of mysterious crafts come to Earth, a linguist must find a common means of communication to discover the visitor's true intentions.
There are days that define your story beyond your life. Like the day they arrived.
What might be called first contact. The objects measure at least...
I'm Colonel G.T. Webber from Army Intelligence.
Pack your bags.
You're at the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations.
Priority one. What do they want? Where are they from?
Now that's a proper introduction.
First of all, just because there's an alien invasion in the movie does not mean this is going to be an action movie. This is not going to be Independence Day Part 3. There aren't spaceships flying around, blowing things up, wiping cities off the map. This is a much more cerebral science fiction movie. The best analogy I can put to it, even though it's not a complete proper one, is it reminds me a lot of Interstellar from Christopher Nolan. It's a better movie than Interstellar, but it reminds me of how Interstellar was a much more somber, intelligent, thinking man's movie that had the special effects, but was focused on the greater implications of it and dealing with the science and really trying to go beyond your standard sci-fi plot. And Arrival does that in the same way. It's not as big as Interstellar. Interstellar is bombastic and huge and is Nolan trying to wrestle with human emotion with no sense of what human emotion actually means. Whereas Arrival is a much slower build. It's a slow burn. And it is focused, it's very clearly focused on Amy Adams, who's the linguist. And not just what she's doing in order to understand these aliens and find a means of communication. It's also about how her emotions, her very specific human emotions, come into play. Now, like some of these cerebral science fiction movies, the effects are fantastic. I mean, you get to this day and age and the effects... I mean, we are at a point where it is almost beyond the ability to discern what's really an effect and what isn't. I mean, obviously, when you see the aliens, when they finally show the aliens, you know it's a special effect because they're aliens. But it looks photoreal. I mean, at this point, there is no, you don't see the matte lines. You don't see the green screen edge. You don't see where the practical effect ends and the visual effect ends. And that's why this kind of movie could only be made today. If it were made 20, 30 years ago, it would have been a very different movie because they would have had to work around the effects. This is full of visual effects, but it uses the visual effects to sort of set the backdrop. It doesn't feel like an effects movie. It doesn't feel like they're trying to work around shooting things. They're able to do it and make it actually completely pragmatically work to the eye, which allows you to accept it and go into the more cerebral part of the movie. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. It's a slow movie. It takes its time. I mean, there's a good chunk of this movie that is kind of her banging her head against the wall trying to figure out how to communicate with these aliens. And they've got some people she plays off of. Jeremy Renner plays a scientist. She's working with Forrest Whitaker, plays an army character who is kind of in charge of handling her, I think, and getting her to do what her job is. Now, the movie presents it with a lot of confusion which would happen if you had aliens land on Earth. I do not completely buy how all this sets up. And it tries to show the paranoia of the military, which, look, you want to have a certain degree of paranoia in your military. You don't want your military walking out there saying, oh, we don't need to defend ourselves. I don't get the sense that they're making this like a John Carpenter movie where the military is all bad and just wants to blow everything up. But I do feel like they oversimplify the military for as much as this movie's about communication and as much as it is about, brains over brawn, ironically opening on Veterans Day, it does dismiss the military as a bunch of lunkheads who just want to blow things up. It could have done a better job of saying, hey, look, the military has this agenda. The CIA has just this agenda. The linguist would have this agenda and the scientist would have this agenda. While that's there, it's clearly the linguist is the one who's the smartest person in the room. It gets a little heavy-handed that way. And when they finally do reveal everything that's going on and a lot of the reasonings behind what's happening in the film, there's parts of it that don't pass the thought test for as cerebral of a movie as it is. I remember sitting there watching when they kind of reveal what's all going on, thinking, I don't know if that would actually work. And I don't know if how it resolves is not something that is going to work. It doesn't quite pass it, but they deliver the ending in such a way that you get to the end and the movie's over before you really have time to process it. And I think it's on the ride home that you go, I don't think so. You know, it's not a big shoot 'em up movie. Like I said, it's not Independence Day. It's not a Transformers movie. These are not aliens that are just being these obnoxious, aggressive creatures. It is cerebral. But then you have to sit there and think. If you're smart enough to travel here, you would have done some reconnaissance, at least figured out how you can communicate with us better rather than just sort of standing there behind a pane of glass and going, come on, guys, talk to me. But still, it's an interesting movie. It's worth seeing. It's a nice alternative piece of science fiction to balance out some of the big, dumb, blow-em-up movies that we've seen. So ultimately, I'm going to say that Arrival kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Peter and the Farm. It's in limited release. You can also catch it on video on demand in various outlets. This documentary provides a raw spotlight on an alcoholic and suicidal man who runs an isolated organic farm in Vermont.
There's not a part of this farm that has not been scattered with my sweat, my blood, my spit, my tears, fingernails, skin, and hair. You got ideas up here about what ought to be? It has its own ideas about what ought to be.
This movie can be a bit off-putting because it doesn't pull its punches. Not doesn't pull its punches in the sense that there's anything really harrowing happening to it, but it shows what being on a farm is like. It shows what being in isolation is like. And it shows why this guy is essentially alone late in his age. And he's a bit of a depressing figure, but a bit fascinating as well. It reminds me a little bit of that movie Burt's Buzz, which is about the guy who did the Burt's Bees chapstick. And it was a profile of him. These people are a bit hermit-like. And you see all the ugliness of a farm. If you are squeamish, I mean, if you are somebody who doesn't want to watch a sheep being slaughtered, don't watch this movie because that's in there. And if you don't want a camera right on the back end of a cow when it's making a cow pie, don't watch this movie. It's the raw, sometimes very gross, sometimes unpleasant moments of farming. But as it shows the unpleasant side of farming in the real pragmatic organic sense, it's also showing the somewhat ugly side of farming when you have somebody who is isolated. It shows the beauty of it as well. But this guy has some serious problems. Just as there's a message out there that says corporate farming, you don't know really what's going on behind the scenes. Well, you don't know what's really going on behind the scenes in an organic farm. This is not Farmville. You know, you don't have happy-go-lucky chickens and cows dancing around in the meadow. Life is not happy-go-lucky cartoon. Life is dirty. Life is grimy. And life involves eating other creatures or eating something else and defecating. So that's what this movie is about. It's an interesting look at a farm. Not entirely my cup of tea, but it's very raw in that sense. So I'm going to have to say, for myself, Peter and the Farm kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Moonlight, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back for the final segment of Fat Guys at the Movies, keeping you in suspense for the last film I'm going to be talking about. That is Moonlight. A young man struggles to come to terms with his own sexuality in three stages of his life, growing up in Miami's inner city.
Who is you, Sharon?
For a long time, try not to remember.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you're gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
This movie, I knew nothing about going in, which is one of the things I love about being a film critic. There are times where I can choose at times to go in completely cold to a movie. And I talked about this, I think I talked about this when I did American Honey a couple weeks ago. I didn't know anything about that movie and went in and kind of had to figure out my way, which is an interesting experience. So I didn't know where this was going. It's got a lot of buzz to it, a huge amount of buzz. And in fact, people are, of course, buzzing, saying, maybe could this be Oscar? You got a ways to go for it to be Oscar because it is so under the radar and so independent. Hollywood, in terms of the Oscars, they like to give it to the bigger movies. You know, people are already talking about Fences, Denzel Washington and Viola Davis getting the noms. But the guys in this movie, they're not going to get it just because this is too small. Plus, Hollywood has a real thing about gay movies. They're all for gays, but they tend not to like the gay movies. Why they're controversial in 2016, why gays are controversial in 2016 is a ridiculous thing. But apparently that's still a thing. Even in Hollywood, a bastion of liberalism. Anyways, Moonlight, it's getting a lot of good buzz, and for good reason. It's a very well-made movie. It's very independent. You can tell it's independent. It has that feel of an independent movie that we've had since the 90s. So it doesn't feel terribly modern, which is good. It's an interesting companion piece to watch with, like, Closet Monster, which I talked about last week, which was Closet Monster, if I was watching it correctly, it wasn't quite nailing the time. It was sort of an out of time kind of movie. This one is certainly contemporary. And it's all the problems that a kid would have in the inner city growing up, compounded with all the problems you'd have coming to terms with your own sexuality, realizing that you're gay. And that gives it a unique spin. It reminds me a little bit of the movie Pariah, which came out 5 or 6 years ago. And that one was about a girl and she was a lesbian and she lived in the inner city and she was dealing with coming to terms with that at her age. That one was a little oppressive and murky at times. I mean, it has a good message, but this one, it presents itself better, I think. In being in these three snapshots, you got him when he's a grade school kid, you've got him when he is a high schooler, and you got him when he's grown up, become an adult, found his own way in life, and of course has to then confront some of these feelings that he's been repressing for so long. It's a very well acted movie and an examination into identity, which is powerful. And it's done by placing it in the ghetto. It gives it a very unique perspective. Now, not something that I necessarily relate to because I'm neither gay nor from the inner city, but it doesn't feel like a retread of all the other LGBT cinema that came out in the 90s, which is kind of my problem with Closet Monsters. I'm like, this felt like it'd been done a dozen times before. This one gives it a unique take because it mixes the general stress and identity fracturing that goes on with the kid coming to terms with that, it mixes that with the cultural mores of the inner city, which can be at times even more homophobic than just average red state middle America, which is, you know, people don't realize that, but it can be very daunting. And it's a powerful film, well acted. You're going to see it go places that you don't expect. And it is a very tender look at the fragility of human emotion, even when you are masking it with a lot of a very hard veneer. So yeah, I'm going to have to say Moonlight totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Doctor Strange was going to make $65 million, and that's about what people were saying, $65, $70, pushing $80 million. The movie overperformed, and I'm not necessarily surprised by that because it got a lot of buzz and it got a lot of positive reviews. It was a great leap into the next stage of the Marvel Universe. $85 million is what it made its opening weekend. That's not the highest you've ever seen for an opening of a superhero movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it beats Captain America, it beats the Hulk, it beats Ant-Man, it beats Thor. The only thing it doesn't beat is Iron Man, which was so much bigger, and it came out in the summer, that first weekend of the summer of 2008. So that's going to be tough to overcome, but that's a great number for it. And already right now, and it's worldwide going into the weekend, it's almost at what the first Captain America's at. It's beat the Incredible Hulk already. By the end of the weekend, it's probably on a worldwide summary going to have beat Ant-Man and possibly nipping on the heels of Iron Man. It'll beat Thor by the end of this weekend globally. It's a great opening and is a feat considering how much of a big pill Doctor Strange was to swallow. I mean, Doctor Strange is out there. And we're stepping into a greater universe, and it worked. It paid off in spades for Marvel. And I also said that there'd be a $35 million Hacksaw Ridge opening. It did not come close to that, which is kind of a shame. I think a lot of it, there was a double issue. One of it was Mel Gibson, but it was also the brutality and of the movie. Maybe if they had waited and released it, done it in that American Sniper Lone Survivor frame, it would have done better, but it's $15 million, which isn't bad considering how much it cost. And then Trolls had made a second. It was like $47 million. This week, I think Doctor Strange is going to hold quite well. It's probably going to be in the 40s easily. It's going to easily beat everything else. Trolls will drop down in about $20 million. And then the rest of the new ones are all going to be fighting for about third place with $15 million. I mean, Arrival's probably going to top the new ones, but Denis Villeneuve doesn't really have mega openings. Prisoners and Sicario weren't like $100 million openers. So this one's a little more slow burn and more of an adult thriller. Not exactly something for kids. It's not a four quadrant movie. Plus, it's falling between two tent poles, which would be Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beasts, which comes out next week. And I think the shut in's going to be much lower, like under 10. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. We just had all the deals with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and the news is still spilling over into the weekend. If you want to get away from all of that, have a sausage party. Yes, Sausage Party is out on DVD. See where I went with that? I took you around the horn for that one. Yeah, Sausage Party, which is a fun movie. It's stupid and it's ridiculous. And at times, it goes a little bit too far. One of the things that happens with the Seth Rogen movie, and I talked about this when it came out, is it can't help but talk about atheism. It keeps delving into that, and I'm just like, don't make this movie about atheism. Just make it about hot dogs and hot dog buns and the body parts that they would represent. It's also horribly politically incorrect with Firewater Indians playing liquor and Salma Hayek is a lesbian taco. I mean, it just couldn't get more offensive in many ways. But it's funny and stupid, not for kids. Don't be a stupid idiot and show your kids this movie. Another one, which is a huge excitement for me, is Red Dwarf Season 11, or Series 11, or Red Dwarf 11, or Red Dwarf XI, depends on how you want to say it. For those who don't know what Red Dwarf was, it was this little sci-fi show that started in the late 80s on the BBC, and isn't like any British show. It had about six episodes per season. And it had staggering production schedules. Sometimes they take a couple years off, but they went into the 90s and then they stopped the show. And they made a movie in 2009 that kind of recharged all the fans. And they did a season 10 a couple years ago. And now they're doing they've done a season 11. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray. And there's a season 12 coming down. It's on Dave in the UK. But since we're in America, or I'm in America, you have to wait for it on DVD. I love Red Dwarf because not only do I already enjoy British humor, Red Dwarf will always feel like Christmas. And this is weird. Why? Because a couple years ago, it was on Netflix and I had put it on my watch list. And then I was looking and said, oh my gosh, Red Dwarf, it's going to go off the service at the end of January. So I started in December, right around over Christmas break, binge watching it. So I watched all these Red Dwarf episodes all right at Christmas time. There's no Christmas to the show. It's just, it feels like a Christmas thing to watch. Just for me, the IT crowd feels like something I watch in the summer. It doesn't feel like a, you know, a winter show. It's a summer show. It's something I watch in summer break with my kids. But Red Dwarf, season 11, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's this very quirky, weird, strange science fiction show about this guy who's 3 million years in the future. He was in suspended animation. He's the last human left in the universe. That is it for the show, I think. I need to wrap things up, and I'll talk to you all next week when I'll be talking about Fantastic Beasts and where to find them and exactly where to find them and The Edge of 17. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.